Well, there is a history of nickel mining in our region, and there may be a future as well. Several would-be miners and mining companies have expressed an interest in different parts of the region, generally west of the I-5 corridor. Now a Canadian company, Spruce Ridge Resources, has staked 115 mining claims on $8 Mountain near Selma. Nickel laterite is present on the mountain, and the claims cover much of the west side. Stephen Balch is a geophysicist and the president and CEO of Spruce Ridge. He joins us to give some details about the company's plans and where they go from here. We'll hear concerns about the plans in a separate segment. Stephen Balch, hello to you and welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks very much for inviting me on.
Well, let's start with just a broad overview of your company. If people aren't familiar, what type of mining do you do? What parts of Canada and the U.S. are you interested in?
So just to start with my background, I'm an exploration geophysicist, graduated in 1985, specialized in nickel since 1995, and I've been involved in some major nickel discoveries over my career. Some have gone into production. Spruce Ridge Resources had some copper and gold properties in eastern Canada in the province of Newfoundland, and a few years ago we were introduced to a nickel opportunity in Oregon, a property called Cleopatra, which is on the Oregon and California border. So since then, we've picked up a total of four properties, Cleopatra and Red Flat. Those are in Curry County, $8 Mountain in Josephine, and a property called Shamrock in Jackson. And our goal is to advance these properties and to see them go into production one day.
Well, let's talk a little bit for people who are probably not familiar. Can you explain the difference between nickel and nickel laterite and the process of how you go about mining nickel laterite and eventually, I assume, turning that into nickel?
Sure. So the rock type in the areas we're interested in is they're called ultramafic rocks. They're mostly peridotite. And over millions of years, they are altered, weathered, they break down. And the nickel that is in the peridotite is enhanced from usually 0.2 to 0.3% all the way up to 1.5, even 2% nickel, which would be considered economic. And this material is sitting at surface. It's usually confined to the top 15 to 20 meters. And so if you wanted to mine it, you would go in and you would have a surface mining operation. It's a combination of soil and rock. You would let the soil drop through and you crush the rock. You would concentrate the material probably on site, and then you would ship the concentrated material off site somewhere for further processing and refining. And that could also be somewhere in Oregon, or it could be elsewhere in the United States or even overseas.
Is there something unique about the geology of Oregon? Do we see these kind of deposits elsewhere across the country?
Well, California and Oregon are a bit unique in that nickel laterite is very extensive through these two states. So it's not something that is really common in the states. We also have nickel deposits in Canada that are called serpentinized nickel. They're not subject to laterization because we're too far north. You have some very unique geology on the West Coast, and in combination with the weather, means that California and southern Oregon in particular have very good deposits of nickel laterite.
Now, it's been known for a while, as I understand, and you could maybe give me a better definition of this historically, that this nickel laterite has been in the area. Has there been any particular reason why there hasn't been an effort to mine this, or was it mined in the past and just suspended for a particular amount of time?
Yeah, so the biggest nickel mine in the United States was in Oregon, the Riddle Mine. They mined it, I think, from around 1954 to about 1984 and took out about 50 million tons of around 1.5% nickel. That's a really good mine. And it was a surface mine. You could go on Google Earth and you could see the outline of the material that was removed. It's pretty obvious. I think it's just west of Riddle, Oregon.
Well, in the area of nickel, thinking about where we're headed with electronics and a lot of other things, I think for many Americans, about the only experience they have with that is we know that there's at least some nickel in our nickels that we have in our currency, and of course it's been used for that. Is the amount of demand for nickel increasing because of electronics or other industries?
Yeah, so there's two things happening. First of all, the demand for nickel has been increasing, you know, at a pretty constant pace, probably between 4 and 6% a year, which is actually quite a bit for a commodity. Most of nickel is used in stainless steel and other building materials. Few, unfortunately, would end up at the hospital in an operating room. Most of the material in there is stainless steel because it's easy to sterilize and it doesn't rust. But, you know, recently, with the development of electric vehicles, nickel has become more prominent, and because you use a lot of nickel in a battery, and so the demand is expected to increase up to 9% a year, and there just aren't enough deposits available worldwide to meet that demand. But on top of that demand, you have countries, China in particular, which have been going into areas where there is a lot of nickel, and that's Indonesia is the main area. 50% of the world's nickel comes out of Indonesia, and all that nickel goes to China. So here we are in North America, the United States and Canada. We're building somewhere between 15 and 18 battery plants over the next few years. And we have really no new nickel supply or cobalt or lithium to feed these battery plants. So it's a problem that's coming at us pretty quick. And I'm sure you know it takes a long time to develop a nickel mine. And, you know, in Oregon, there's been a lot of resistance to mining, as it is, it's even worse in California. And a lot of that is the history of mining really isn't very, it's not very good. If you go back prior to the 1970s, there was really no environmental standards, especially in the areas of water, discharging into waterways, and also air pollution. So we have these relics of the past to deal with. But also, if you go outside of the United States into places like Indonesia, which are currently mining, they have no environmental standards currently, whereas the mining industry has changed quite a bit. I look at it more as a high-tech industry today. There are a lot more standards, especially in the areas, again, of water and air, that are just not being followed internationally. And, you know, for nickel, which is my area of interest, half of it comes from Indonesia, and then the second and third largest producers are the Philippines and Russia. And I'm not sure we want to get our nickel from Russia.
Well, let me ask a little bit about, I know that some minerals are able to be recycled or repurposed, and there's electronic places where you drop off your electronics for that. Is nickel something that is in that category or no?
Yes, you can recycle nickel, of course, but the thing about batteries is they need a very high purity. I think it has to be over 99% purity. And so you start with, say, 1% in the ground, and you concentrate it maybe to 20%, and from there you have to concentrate it up to 99%. And that process doesn't seem to like recyclable nickel. So you do need good primary supply of nickel. And I mean, Canada has been a big provider of nickel over the years. We have four large regions across the country. But, you know, one was discovered in the 1880s, another one in 1960, another one in 1960, and the most recent one was found, and it was in production in 2004. So these deposits are being mined out, and we really need to replace them. You want to replace things in North America if that's where you're going to be using the material from.
In a different segment, we're going to talk to some conservationists about their concerns with $8 Mountain. I mean, other than federal regulations and the fact that, as you said, the mining industry is trying to be more compliant, are there any things that you can do in particular to address environmental concerns about mining on $8 Mountain?
I mean, the one thing that the mining industry hasn't done very well is education. And so not a lot of people really understand what a modern mining scenario would look like, how we explore, how we disturb the earth, what we need to do in order to mine, where we stockpile, what the material is like when it's sitting at surface, what people's risks are. So we really need to, I think, kind of better educate people as to what the risks are, and getting maybe a bit more directly in the path of people who are looking for, you know, rare plant species and so on. Most of the people, I mean, almost all the people in the mining industry have been outdoors types of people. We don't want to stand in the way of preserving plants and so on. We're certainly, don't want to pollute the water and the air. It's against the law, and it's extreme liability. So there's that, but we don't want to be, you know, bad neighbors. The positive things of the mining industry, of course, are we provide a lot of revenue. Most of that revenue gets distributed close to the mine, and so we provide jobs. We pay taxes. And we don't pollute. But I think, you know, to try and answer your question more specifically, people need to better understand what it is we're doing, what the risks are, before they, you know, make a decision about whether they want to mine in their neighborhood.
Well, let me ask a question where we're at today with this. You've acquired the claims. How long, do you have a timetable on how long you think it would be before mines would be running on $8 Mountain?
So one of the problems in North America is there's just so much red tape on both sides of the border that it takes up to 20 years to get a mine in production. So that's hard to wrap your head around why we would even be interested in exploring, but you have to start somewhere. So we have four projects. Two of them are in southern part of Oregon. They're more advanced. They have resources that have been delineated. So we know roughly the minimum amount of material that's present and what the grade of the material is. So we can do some more exploration, but develop a mine plan, do a feasibility study, and that timeline would be kind of 2, 3, 4, 5 years. At $8 Mountain, it would be considered more of a grassroots property. There's no resource there, so we would have to go in and start on the ground doing surface sampling and mapping and so on. And from there, and that would take, you know, a year to 2 years. A bit of shallow drilling, sometimes just top 10 feet, eventually 50 feet, say, maybe even 100 feet. And that's probably another 3, 4, 5 years until a resource has been delineated. So that process is, you know, probably 5 to 8 years away at $8 Mountain minimum. And then you do a feasibility study, then you have to finance to go into production. Production decision would take a couple of years, and then construction would take a couple of years. So I couldn't imagine a mine at $8 Mountain in under 10 years.
We have been speaking this morning with Steve Balch. He is a geophysicist and president and CEO of Spruce Ridge Resources in Canada. They're looking at developing the west side of $8 Mountain and bringing out some nickel laterite. Steve Balch, thank you so much for visiting with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.